Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Dr. Toby Travis. Dr. Travis is the founder of TrustEd, a framework for business organization and school improvement focused on the development of trusted leaders. He is an executive consultant with the Global School Consulting Group, an adjunct professor for the International Graduate Program of Educators for the State University of New York College at Buffalo, and an experienced teacher and school administrator. He is currently superintendent at Village Christian Academy in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Dr. Travis is the author of the award-winning book, TrustEd, The Bridge to School Improvement, which is available on Amazon, featured in Forbes magazine, and named Book of the Month in November, nominated for Book of the Year in 2021 by the Magic Pen. Welcome to the podcast, Toby.
Thank you so much. Great to be here with you.
Well, it's great to have a conversation on trust among school leaders and just trust in the educational profession in general. I think it's a very important topic. But we're going to start out with the question I ask everybody to launch the recording. Tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, as I shared with you earlier, I instantly reflect back to my very first formal classroom experience. And I had been a seminar leader and teacher for years. I was kind of, you know, second career coming into to teaching and wanted to get off the road. And so, you know, came into a teaching position and was not prepared for the level of disconnect between faculty and admin. And really, in some sectors, a very toxic environment. And just seeing and trying to figure out, okay, well, what are the issues here? Why is everybody so angry with each other? And why do we see, you know, why do teachers see administration as the enemy and administration seeing teachers and sometimes parents as the enemy? Rather than, hey, I thought this was about the kids and about learning, you know, so kind of all my my illusions of what school should be were just shattered instantly at my first job. And within the second year, I had already been encouraged to think about moving into administration. And so for a few years, I was teaching classes and doing part-time admin. I was a middle school coordinator. And then as I came into a principalship and really had the opportunity to start addressing some of those issues, and this was all in the same school, we just had some very frank conversations with our leadership team and started to think about, okay, how do we, first of all, just acknowledge the fact, yes, trust is broken. Let's start there.
Yeah.
And then open up the conversation about, okay, how do we repair this? So that was kind of the motivation to start addressing the issues. It was greatly helped by a friend of mine, David Horsacher, wrote a bestseller called The Trust Edge. Number one on Wall Street Journal, I think, a few years ago. And actually, Dave came down. This was an international school. And David came down to Ecuador, is where we were, and was just great in helping us kind of think through strategies. But interesting, what I found in talking and then working and learning a lot from David, though, is schools are unique. And so that was the motivator for me then, as I went into my doctoral program, to start looking, okay, what does trust research, what does rebuilding trust and all those elements associated with that look like specifically for school leaders? And then here we are years later, you know, and that's really what the book is about, is, okay, when we know trust is critical, but what does that look like specifically for principals and department heads and superintendents? What are the specific steps that they need to do in the world of education to ensure there's high levels of trust? So that's kind of where that all began. It was coming out of those trenches of, I don't like working in this kind of environment. And by the way, I'm just kind of condensing that story really quick. We intentionally worked on that for a number of years. And before I left that school, this was a private school, it hit its highest enrollment in history. And I largely credit my team, because when leadership is trusted, teachers are happy and engaged. When teachers are happy and engaged, students succeed. And when students succeed, parents are happy. And, and so that makes all the difference when it comes to enrollment. And so that was very affirming to see. Are there still, and were there imperfections? Absolutely. There's no such thing as a perfect school or a perfect business. But we saw marked improvement, and we saw the effects of that could be tied directly, I believe, to that increased enrollment as well.
And I think in the pre-chat, you mentioned it took 6 years for this turnaround in school culture to occur.
Right. And that, you know, it's one of the things when I'm coaching and training others, is we talk about a lot, is, you know, you got to be into this for the long haul. When there's trust issues, they're not repaired quickly. They can be repaired, but you've got to be in it for the long haul.
And I think also the fact that if you have a lot of turnover in staff and you're trying to improve school culture, you got to be on top of it from year to year when you have staff turnover and really follow through with what you're working on to change.
Absolutely. And this is why, you know, it's so important that mission, vision, values are clearly identified, articulated, protected, and constantly out there. You know, there's an old marketing phrase, if you don't tell your story, someone else will. So as school leaders, we've got to know what our story is. We've got to tell it. We got to hire it. You know, this also comes back to even just, you know, our beliefs and values around what is quality education? What does that look like? What are our beliefs and values around the role of parents and teachers? And make sure that those things are all well articulated and out front. They're the things that we assess and that we constantly train to. That's how you build culture. And then you hire to that as well. I've actually seen some schools do a great job with that, especially, again, I go back to the international setting where turnover is a constant. You know, a lot of folks, they'll go teach in an international school to have the experience for a year or two. And so you've got this constant turnover. Well, how do you build consistency in that? You know your story and you hire to your story.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. So let's talk about a little bit about the framework. So you write about the 6 components of trusted leadership in your book. So if you want to talk to me a little bit about the how you help schools develop school improvement plans and initiatives, and I think you have some slides you'd like to share and talk through.
Sure, I can do that. Let me just share my screen. So the framework is evidence-based. It's all research validated. So, and I am a bit of a data nut. So when I first started looking into trust research, and you're thinking, oh, these are soft skills, how are you going to be able to put any kind of, you know, clear numbers to what this looks like in building? And with the help of some wonderful people, smarter than me, and I've learned a lot from in that process, we were able to come up with an assessment tool there is no perfect assessment, but it's a very effective assessment in driving and informing school improvement through the development of leadership. So some of the key research, and not to go terribly deep into this, but this is one that I know is alarming to folks. And what's interesting about this stat, Anna, is it's true whether talking the business world or the school world. So if you look at business research on improvement initiatives that are happening in small, medium, even large businesses, 70% of them fail. School improvement initiatives, 70% of them fail. And when you look at the why behind that, often you'll see literature that talks about, well, there were failures in execution, but you have to look behind that too, and then look at this research that shows us that the number one indicator of successful schools is trusted leadership. And then you start putting those two numbers together, you realize, this is what's going on. And what's interesting about the success research is it doesn't seem to matter how you define success. I mean, take a look at this. When there are high trust levels, we see increased retention of students and quality staff. We see higher student achievement levels. Catch that. There's a direct correlation between the trust level of a principal in a building and to the achievement level of the students. we see fewer behavior management issues. And I love to talk and train on this. And there's others who do this, again, better than myself. But it's a key element to realize that the higher the trust level between the administrator and the teacher, we actually see fewer behavior management issues. And there's many elements to that as it kind of trickles up, I like to say, because if you see it modeled between the administrator and the teacher, then teachers are modeling it with their students. Mm-hmm. You know, culture trumps curriculum every time, and, you know, all of that stuff. Stronger community relations, you know, schools, whether private, public, parochial, proprietary, they all have a level of success based on the community surrounding them. And mm-hmm. if you want to increase community involvement, community relations, focus on developing high levels of trust. A major study that was done on discretionary energy. So it's basically talking about volunteerism. Saw again, a direct correlation between the willingness, and this was talking about employees, mm-hmm. employees willing to engage and volunteer above and beyond the paycheck when there's high levels in trust in the leadership. And then, of course, greater financial stability. Again, a really important one in the private sector. But defining trust is really complex, is what I discovered on the front end. In fact, we'll often, in a training session, we'll do a word cloud and we'll say, okay, give me three words when you think of the word trust, and the board will be just filled because it is complex. We use a short word to talk about a lot of things. And this is why we need to be able to have, I believe, a visual construct to be able to understand and get our arms around the issue. And I have to give full credit to my wife. I had finished my doctoral program. I remember sitting at the kitchen table and I'm saying, okay, how do I make it practical though for folks to understand this? Mm-hmm. And she sits here and she says, well, sweetie, isn't it? It's really just like a bridge. Mm-hmm. You've got to have all these components connected for it to be trustworthy. And I'm like, yes, beautiful. And then I went back and looked at the research, and it almost perfectly fit into six components of constructing a suspension bridge, and really seven if we talk about the cables. And here they are very quickly, and I won't go into detail. This kind of, that's what the book's for, right? There's a foundation to a bridge. Well, in leadership, we're talking about beliefs and values. In a bridge, there's a substructure, and this connects everything to the foundation. Well, in leadership, it's about consistently connecting and supporting everything we do in the school to what we say we believe and what those values are. In fact, that's typically the number one area where I see trust falling away. School leaders, school boards even, will say, we believe this about education, we believe this about the students, but then practice and protocol and behaviors of leadership do not match what they say they believe, and trust is broken. So repairing the substructure is all about consistency. The girders of a bridge, now those are the spans that go underneath the bridge, right? Here, I use that analogy to talk about our ability to contextualize and adapt. Every bridge is unique. And you will also see the girders are different based on the width of bridge. Is the bridge going around a corner? Again, just the context of where the bridge is built. Well, trust is built in that ability to adapt and contextualize to the needs of students, to the needs of staff, to the needs of the community. The superstructure of the bridge, right? This is what we see from the greatest distance. Well, here we talk about intentionally building culture through intentionally building relationships. The bearings of a bridge. Now, these are often unseen, especially even in large bridges, you don't realize that they're there, but these are the moving parts of a bridge. And here, kind of like the girders, we're talking about this ability to be flexible, but here's the key component in leadership. In order for leaders to be flexible, they've got to be involved. Mm-hmm. So there's no such thing as distant leadership. So these are leaders who they're in the committee meetings, they're in the hallways, they're in the classrooms, they're engaged in what I call the nuts and bolts of education, which is curriculum, instruction, assessment, and learning environment. And then there is the deck of the bridge, which, you know, we think on a bridge, this is simple, right? It's a flat surface mm-hmm. with a couple of lines and some lights. Well, it looks simple. But if you talk to engineers who design these things, you learn, no, there's multiple levels and there's all kinds of science and physics that go into a deck being made so it doesn't fall apart. And so it can withstand the weather and the flexing and all of that. And here the basic idea is trusted leaders know how to take the complex and make it simple. The direction is clear. We know what lane we're in. We know where we're going. There are orderly systems so that there aren't surprises for anyone. So here we're talking about, you know, the deck is order and clarity. And then to tie these all together are the suspension cables. And that's where we'll talk about very specific skill sets. And numerous studies have identified what those are. We actually know there are 21 specific skill sets of leadership in school leadership that must be present among a leadership team. No one individual can possess all those, but those suspension cables have got to be connected to counterbalance all of this. And then one last thing on this, Dana, is a critical element of the research is all six have got to be there. Mm-hmm. And if one is lacking, trust is lacking. So you might have someone who, again, they've got their values, their beliefs, they're well articulated. They might even be great in the superculture of building relationships. But if they're not involved, if they don't know curriculum, instruction, and learning environments, and they don't know education, no, they're not going to be trusted. They might be great people. You might like them a lot, but they're not going to really know how to lead. So there you go. Those are the components. And this is what we assess and then help individuals and teams build their skill sets and competencies in those areas that need improvement. It also works for HR in creating a profile of who do we need to add to our team. Because again, there is no super administrator who can do all of this. It is all about developing leadership teams that can build competencies in these six areas.
Yeah, and I think that's a great metaphor for a bridge and using those parts of the bridge. I've never heard it put that way, and just something your wife just kind of mentioned to you and how you're looking at those parts and how everything could tie together. So you also have an assessment, Trust Ed Leader 360. So how can this help leaders assess their trust level amongst maybe a leadership team and also amongst the employees at their school?
Right. So the 360 is it's app based. You can do it on your phone or on any device. And basically a link goes out to all of the staff. This is not a monkey survey, or we use a data company to ensure anonymity and confidentiality. That's a critical element. It's brief. Actually, we've been able to design the assessment so it can be completed in 10 to 12 minutes. Okay. There are 48 questions. They're all research-based questions. And out of those questions, when we survey a school population, employee population about their administrators, we were able to give really good data on where an administrator sits in their level of competency in these six components of trust. Okay. And we get a team score, we get individual scores, and then we're able to build action plans, professional development plans, determine, okay, is there some personal coaching that's needed here? Is there additional training that's needing? Is there a school-wide initiative that needs to be addressed? I mean, if we find that all administrators are low in a certain number, we're going to find, okay, no, there's something school-wide here that's an issue. So the 360, actually, again, it can kick out personal data, team data, school-wide data, and a profile data for HR when you're looking to add somebody to the leadership role. And again, we use a company called SchoolRight, okay, based out of Texas, and they administer the assessment. And it's really fairly quick, and it's very affordable. I'm very thankful that SchoolRight has made it accessible, really, to, and schools around the globe are using it. And because our intent is to reassess every semester. Here, what we're looking at is, let's get a baseline assessment, just like we do in teaching. Let's see where the kids are at. Okay, let's see where the administrators are at. We set short-term goals. That was something, again, that I learned from David Horsager's work, the value of short-term goals to build success quickly, and then reassess, reestablish goals, and do that continual planning cycle. And through that, we've seen, some really, really fun and encouraging turnarounds with some teams. And now some of them not as quick as others. There's been a lot of distractions these last few years. But that's the 360. That's what that assessment is about. And we have one for business leaders. We have one for school leaders specifically. And there's also a self-assessment. And if you remind me, I'll shoot a link to you that you can also share with your listeners. It's free. Now, it's not true data, you know, but it's a great conversation piece because you can go in and assess yourself and see, okay, where am I on these six? It gives a very simple report. The 360 gives a rather in-depth, a lot of data. And there's an executive summary that comes with it as well. It's usually about 10 or 12 pages. But the self-assessment will give you a little scorecard on how you did on the six. And it's great to compare those. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll ask administrators when we're first talking, go self-assess, see what you think you're doing. And then we do the 360. Mm-hmm. And then you find what I call the trust perception gap. You know, where we thought we were and where others think we are. Because in this area, perception is reality. Mm-hmm. What our employees perceive about us is their reality. And that's what we must address. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, that's the assessment piece or the assessment tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow. And the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
A really good way to start building that trust wherever your school might be at. If there's a school that's had major issues for years, or a school that just is having a change in leadership or a lot of turnover in staff, I think that's a great tool to use.
Well, you know, any time we open ourselves up to be assessed by mm-hmm. our employees, builds trust.
Yeah.
You know, and open yourself and then listen. Mm-hmm. And giving teachers opportunity to give feedback on their administrators, that action in itself is a step towards building greater trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about some of the doctoral research you did in terms of the critical role of trusted leadership in business organizations and schools.
But again, I gave some highlights of that in the PowerPoint already. What we found first in the literature review was, oh my goodness, you have all these benefits. But then what my work was about connecting the specific behaviors, competencies, and disciplines that have been identified for a number of years now by folks like Bob Marzano and his team that we've known about, but then connecting those to these six components of trust. So that was really, one of my bringing to it is, okay, we know that trust is essential. In fact, if that's not taken care of, really what we found is nothing else going to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that 70% of school improvement initiatives failing, well, that's because we're not dealing with the root issue. We're, and I'm a big fan of all kinds of things that are happening and excited about what's happening in education, project-based learning and authentic literacy. Those are all, wonderful. And you want to see this, student-driven learning. Yes, yes, yes. But it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work if you haven't taken care of the leadership trust issue that mm-hmm. has to be foundational. And so what we basically, the doctoral work was just looking at how do we do that? How do we assess it? And then how do we intentionally see improvement in those areas so that we can measure it, move it forward so that everything else can work.
So you told me about some of your research and articles has been highlighted in Forbes magazine three times in the last month. It's about the hesitancy of teachers coming back into the workplace, current events that are happening with the mass exodus of school staff, just any time during the school year this year. So highlight some of that writing that you've done.
Well, I was more surprised than anyone, especially that three times over the last month, and Forbes of all places, which is interesting that they're, maybe because I'm an academic, I guess, but I was in a conversation with a gentleman who writes for Forbes and just had made the comment that I do think it's a trust issue. It is one of the major issues of the hesitancy of people to come back to work. Now, we could talk about educators who have left. We've known, actually, there was a Gallup study. There was a number of studies that have come out over the last few years. And the number one reason teachers leave is because of their supervisor.
Yeah,
they do not feel supported. It's not kids. It's not behavior. It's not lack of resources. It's not compensation. It's I don't trust my leader. He or she doesn't support me. That's why they're leaving. Well, And then why are they not coming back? It's because they believe they're going to get taken advantage of. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, there's because there's so much catch up work now to do. And that was another article that I forget who published that one, but that may have been in the Knowledge Review where I was talking about we have to go back and recalibrate now.
Yeah.
You know, for us to be assessing students today based on assessments we were using pre-pandemic really isn't equitable to those students. You know, a lot of folks are talking about the learning loss. How do we deal with that? It's like, well wait a minute. A learning loss means you've received the instruction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those assessments we've been using, those standardized assessments, what they're assuming the student had received that instruction. Well, we've got now millions and millions and millions of kids who have not received that instruction. We're going to have to recalibrate those assessments. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point of the assessment is to identify how well did they receive the instruction? How are they growing? And so that's another part of it. But it's put this pressure on teachers to catch up. And it's like, no, we're not going to catch up. We're going to assess where's the student at right now? What do they have the capacity to do? Educate them, invest in them for their future and in this current reality. And it's hard work. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. So again, I think, again, what was picked up a couple of different times now by several magazines was this idea of we're not coming back to work because we don't trust our bosses to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the commercial world, and that was the article that just came out earlier this week, as we were talking about who is higher priority, your clients or your employees? Or in the school setting, we would say, who is higher priority, parents and kids or teachers? And I've argued for years, and it's not just an argument or opinion, it's the research, and I have the evidence, that when we value teachers, when we support them, when we pay them well, when we challenge them, so it's not just about giving them soft jobs. It's no, it engage them, support them, challenge them, give them, again, the capacity, the environment to work well, student achievement levels go out of the roof, right? And there's a direct correlation because when teachers are happy, kids get happy and they get engaged in the learning. When kids are engaged and happy and in the learning and high levels of achievement, parents are happy. When parents are happy, then we get to be happy as administrators. But it has to be in that order. And where school leaders mess it up so many times is they'll see a real need of students, or they see a real pressure from parents.
Yeah.
And they put that as a priority over the care of their teachers. And then it kills morale. Mm-hmm. And then teachers leave or get disengaged. You know, I was telling someone the other day, a good practical step to gauge the school culture is when that final bell of the day rings, go walk around the campus and see how many teachers are still in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Highly engaged schools where teachers are well supported and they trust their leadership. Again, that discretionary time study I told you about, they hang out. They're working, they're collaborative, they're doing extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where trust levels are low, no, it's a ghost town at 3:15.
Yeah. Boom,
the building's empty.
Yeah, no, I've seen that happen myself. Like, yeah, and then there's a lot of rumors, there's a lot of backstabbing and all things. Yeah. So it's just, it really trickles down and I've seen how it, you know, affects the student behavior and, you know, how students act is, you know, they look to the adults for the example. So, well, let's kind of shift and talk about the continual coaching and mentoring of school leaders that's needed. And I think after the pandemic hit, a lot more leaders are trying to connect with others through Zoom and through virtual means. But, you know, there are still a lot of leaders, administrators in any type of capacity that are kind of on their own island. They don't necessarily have any coaching in their district. They might be the only administrator at their school. So kind of what's happening, and you talked to me also about the departure rate, the percentage of leaders who leave within a certain amount of years because they are isolated.
In fact, I just saw another report and it was saying 30%, this was public school superintendents, 30% are leaving this year. Wow. And that's the highest on record. I mean, we've never seen that kind of departure rate. And you think about where we're going to be at next year, there's going to be so many vacancies for leadership. Now, that also provides perhaps some opportunity for aspiring leaders there. You want a job in school leadership, it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. There's just tons of openings. But here's one of the things that I observe is one of the mistakes that boards make in the private world, school owners make is they hire the administrator. Okay, I'm a superintendent. I have a doctorate, right? So they hire me to come in and lead the ship and just assume, hey, he's got the degree. I'm paying him, you know, a decent salary. Boom, he should just do it. And these are probably the people who, not more, but equal to the need of coaching and mentoring teachers and students. The leaders need constant mentoring. Mm-hmm. I have been blessed all my life with mentors. And there have been a couple of seasons when I didn't have them. And I figured that out really. I was like, okay, why am I struggling so much? Like, no, I need somebody to talk to. That's not an employee. That's not a board member. Right. Mm-hmm. So you need someone who understands your world and yet is that third party, you know, the third eye out there. And there is huge value in that. And so I'm always talking to school board members and to school owners. You have to ensure that your school leaders have got support. So whether that's through a professional coach or a consultant, it can be a friend. It doesn't have to be a paid service. I was very fortunate for a number of years as an administrator. Literally across the street from me was a large nonprofit organization, and their CEO became one of my best friends. Well, he also became one of my mentors because we could relate at that leadership level and share our woes and our problems and our challenges and brainstorm. And that was just a huge, huge value and benefit. So I've seen it in my own life. And I've also seen so many drown because they just feel like they're so alone. They can't talk to their employees. They can't talk to their board without feeling like, oh, I'm looking, I don't know what I'm doing. And they need a safe place to go. And it kills marriages. So it's not take it home and talk to your spouse about it. No, you need a safe professional who understands the challenges and can also help you think through next steps. So critical element. I'm honored. I only have a capacity to take on about six of those a year. And it's some of the work that I enjoy the most is just connecting with those administrators. And helping them navigate their challenges. But it's important work. It's essential work, actually, for the health and well-being of school leaders and for schools. Because if school leaders are not healthy, their schools aren't healthy.
And I think there's a lot of experienced leaders who are now working as consultants, at least part-time, along with leading school. And you know, realizing that they need to offer those services to help coach the newer leaders or leaders who feel lost and like they don't have anybody to talk to. And, you know, a lot of leaders that I meet with weekly in a mastermind, I mean, they are busy people, but, you know, they realize that this hour every Wednesday fills their cup, right? And we can be discussing a variety of topics, but, you know, and you could talk with a group or you could meet with somebody just individually. But I think just having those like-minded individuals where you're able to discuss an issue that's going on and just bounce ideas off of another really helps.
Well, don't you think the value of podcast? I mean, even what you're doing here, I mean, this is why podcasts have become so popular. I think people are looking for, you know, they're looking for coaches. They're looking for input on ideas. They want people to understand their problems. And so I think that's also part of what's going on with the podcast. And the reason I kind of laughed a little bit a moment ago is because I was thinking of another world-class consultant friend of mine, Willpower Harris. Will was saying, right now, you know, you throw a ball on the wall, it's going to hit a consultant. So many people, unfortunately, are leaving the business and the education world, and so they look for self-employment, you know, as consultant. In fact, another friend of mine just the other day, who's been a consultant for 30 some years, and He said, yeah, he's had so many school administrators or individuals call him and say, hey, we want to get into consulting. And he's like, well, what experience have you had doing that? Well, no, I want to get started. And it's like, good luck with that.
I have an individual. I have an episode that will be released when this comes out, but I think she's been in the consulting field for 20 years. And, you know, it wasn't a one and done. It took about 2 years to really get a lot of clients. So. Well, we've really talked a lot about a lot about your research, the components of trust and how leaders can get support. And out of everything we discussed, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
The importance of self-reflection and getting others' input. I mentioned earlier, we build trust just by asking our employees to give us feedback on our performance. Mm-hmm. Well, we all do well to find others to speak into our lives. And there's an element of mental health even. There's a major study out on that, that if you are open to reflection and open to others speaking into your life, it makes for greater mental health. For those who are not open, we see there are some elements of mental illness that are associated with those who are not open to being critiqued and taking self-reflection steps. So I think that would be an important piece to start. I mentioned earlier, I am a bit of a data bug. There are lots of opinions that are out there, Dana. There's lots of good ideas. I want to have the greatest confidence I can that, you know, life is short, time is short. I want to be investing in the steps that'll make the most systemic difference in my life and in the organization that I'm working in. And therefore, I would also just counsel your listeners, look to the evidence, look to the data. Don't just be, leaning on whatever the latest pop idea is. Talk to those that have really done the homework, and then use that that data, use that information to drive your next steps and inform what you're doing. And I guarantee you will see greater speed, because then that's really what it's all about, is how quickly can we correct the situation that we're in? How quickly can we get to that next initiative? Well, the speed will be generated in the improvement when you're working with information that's real and true, mm-hmm. and has been validated and measured.
Yeah, because a lot of people are just thinking about what's the next big improvement we need to make, what's the next initiative. But when you realize that there are a lot of underlying issues and the things that you need to take, one step at a time, baby steps sometimes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I've heard when someone talked about, you're driving a Lamborghini, you got this powerful car, but you come down into a foggy valley. What do you have to do? Mm-hmm. You got to slow down. It doesn't matter how much horsepower you've got under the engine, until you've got clarity, you can't go quickly. Once you have clarity, and clarity comes again through trusted leadership, and understanding where are we going and why do we need to be there. It's let the data drive that, get that addressed. And you mentioned professional development initiatives. Often that too, I'm just seeing a lot of schools make mistakes. They're responding to some problem often. Some squeaky wheel. There was some unfortunate incident maybe with a student and a teacher. Parents got upset about something. And so they launch a PD initiative to try to address that rather than, let's use an assessment tool of our faculty and staff on their pedagogical, their teaching methods, their assessment methods, and then let's use that data to drive our professional development. And that's another element that I work with schools. We've developed what we call the CIALE Methods Survey, and CIALE is an abbreviation for Curriculum, Instruction, Assessment, Learning, Environment Methods Survey. Mm-hmm. But then we look at, okay, this is basically an assessment of teacher practice. And there's other really good assessments out there, by the way. It's not there. There was a group out of Wisconsin that came up with a fantastic tool as well. But the idea here is, rather than our opinions and our anecdotes driving us, no, let's get the data. Mm-hmm. Let's get some numbers put together here, and then let those numbers inform what we're going to work on next year or next semester. And again, what you'll find is when you do that, you got greater speed and improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Not just kind of go off of a hunch or an isolated incident, like you said. So that's really important to remember. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Well, the website is trustedconsulting.org. So that is probably the easiest place to find me and connect with me. Again, trustedconsulting.org. The book, Trust Ed, The Bridge to School Improvement, is available on Amazon, or you can find the link through the website. And I thank you for the opportunity to be here and to connect with your listeners.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.